Good afternoon, everyone. You're listening to Appallingly Luscious. I'm Jocelyn, and this is Mel. This is going to be the final episode, for now anyways, and today we're going to be talking about gaze, affect, connectedness, and humanity.
Yeah, so as many of you know, or maybe you've forgotten by now, because it's the fifth episode and we've discussed a lot, we're diving into this project for our Salem Witch Trials capstone, and many of the responses that we've gotten from our capstone class is that how does this connect to the Salem Witch Trials, to witchcraft? Because, you know,
or just to what we talked about in class in general.
Yeah, just to what we've talked about in class in general. And so this is kind of the episode that is really going to hit that and tie it in. Because, you know, we're doing this for our English capstone. And so the goal, no matter the topic, is to critically look at something, you mm-hmm. know, and write or produce something that is, you think...
Yeah.
You know,
critical analysis.
And so in that aspect, I believe at least we've done quite the critical analysis of this text. But again, to try to connect it a little bit more into what we've talked about, for example, connectedness, like transcorporeal body, all of that stuff is what we're kind of going to be diving into today. And starting off, something that I just... maybe have noted on an earlier episode, but really just found a lot in the book is, like, gaze and how everyone is always looking at Bella. Especially because at this new school, she talked about how, in Forks, at her old school, she didn't attract any attention or, you know, she kind of just was on the outside.
Yeah,
but now at this new school... immediately, her first day, she talks about how everyone's, like, looking at her and everybody, like, all those guys want to, like, ask her to prom and all this stuff. And then when she, like, starts dating Edward.
Everybody's looking at her even more because she's
even
with
more,
Edward, the untouchable boy.
Yeah, literally. And so this idea of, like, the gaze and how people just, like, look at each other and even without words, we're kind of able, whether or not you'd misinterpret the looks, like you're able to kind of see what people are thinking and that even ties into Edward's power, like he can literally
see and hear
what everybody's thinking, but just like the way that like humans show emotion
mm-hmm.
is just very, very interesting to me.
Yeah, and no, it's I don't know, and a lot of it has to do with, I guess there's a lot of conversation in Twilight, and even in the movie, you really get this with the way the scenes are shot. There's a big focus on people's eyes or people not being able to look away from each other and just kind of those conversations, those silent conversations between people. Like, one specific example that I can think of in the movie is when Edward and Bella end up going to the police station on their way home from...
the restaurant,
and Edward's having a verbal conversation with Carlisle and Bella while he's also having a silent conversation with Carlisle, because Carlisle, I'm assuming, is thinking things different than what he's saying, and Edward's able to read that and communicate his understanding via his eyes.
Yeah, because this is at least in the movies, pre-knowledge that Edward's a vampire, right?
Yeah.
In the book, at that dinner, he reveals a lot.
Yeah, he says that he can read minds, but...
In the movie, that conversation doesn't happen as much, but the whole... yeah, that's very interesting, the whole, like, insider-outsider knowledge because of Edward's ability to read minds.
Yes, and, like... Going off of that, just the way Bella interacts with the vampires, like this kind of plays in with the connectedness as well. She mentions multiple times that she's unable to take her eyes off of people, or specifically the Cullens, and how she's just kind of drawn to look at them.
Yeah.
She does like kind of prevent herself from staring at them all the time, but it seems like it takes some form of willpower.
Well, yeah, and early in the book, just on page 19, there's a quote that says, "I stared because their faces, so different, so similar, were all devastatingly, inhumanely beautiful. They were faces you never expected to see.
Inhumanely or inhumanly?
Inhumanly. You're right. They were faces you never expected to see, perhaps on the airbrushed pages of a fashion magazine, or painted by an old master as the face of an angel. It was hard to decide who was the most beautiful, maybe the perfect blonde girl or the bronze-haired boy. And just that quote that, like, the staring and inability to, like, look away. And I think that that's portrayed very well in the movies. Like, you've talked about the eyes and all of that. But just the, especially in the cafeteria, I think is where they portray this a lot with the, like, the cameras look at them. And you just, like, can't, even you, the viewer, can't look away.
Yeah, and there's a lot of shots that are focused really just, like, their eyes, like, just that small bar of, like, mm-hmm. face or whatnot, focusing on their eyes.
Well, and that ties into Breaking Dawn Part 1, the very end. Spoiler alert, when Bella opens her eyes at the end, yeah. and it's just her face, and yeah. they're just, like, blood red.
Yeah.
Oof.
And also, you can see the difference in the way, I guess, feelings are involved in gaze, because Bella is acutely aware of other people gazing at her, especially when she first shows up at Forks, and she's incredibly uncomfortable about it. Even when her first interaction with Edward, he won't stop looking at her, and he's all, or maybe he stops looking, I don't remember, but she's aware of him and everybody else just looking at her. She's super uncomfortable about it, yet at the same time she's staring at the Cullens and doesn't really care about whether they're uncomfortable with her looking, though she does kind of try and hide it because it'd be weird if they called her out, or she'd be afraid of being called out on it. But then later in the movie, when her and Edward really become like an item, she talks about how everybody's staring at her and him, and she likes it. So just like that kind of evolution of unwanted gaze, and I guess, I don't know, the other one is maybe wanted gaze.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so kind of diving into, we've talked about in previous episodes a few of the powers, quote unquote, that all of the characters have. But today we're going to focus in on Edward, Jasper, and Alice's powers. So we kind of talked a little bit about Edward's, but something that I find super interesting is Jasper's powers. So yeah. He's an empath, so he can influence people's emotions and feel their emotions.
Yes.
And I think that this ties into this idea of affect that we've been talking about in our class earlier, and, like, your ability to, like, influence others, and how we're all, you know, connected, and that how we talked about the grid, you know, the force grid, and how we're all, like, connected, and it was this super deep theoretical analysis on just how people, and there's been studies on sicknesses and stuff where, you know, suddenly a whole group of people that are in tight quarters, like the military, I think I did a little bit of research on that one, how they all got sick, quote unquote, again, with similar symptoms, because you kind of, like, feed off of each other,
yeah,
in a way. And just Jasper's unique power in his ability to not just theoretically influence, he can actually change how you're feeling.
Yeah, and if you think about the way powers are described as coming about in Twilight, it's basically a lot of it is there's some aspect of your human life, so that is amplified after becoming a vampire. So you could think of Jasper as being a super charismatic person, or just being generally in tune with people's emotions and, like, I guess the vibe of whatever situation he's in. Because I mean, there are people who are like that, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I've heard people say that. Anyways, so just kind of seeing how that is his connectedness and whatnot, and how that just kind of, I don't know, evolved. Mm-hmm. And it's just him being able to influence. And I want to say, out of all of the powers or abilities that the Cullens have, his is the most, I want to say his is pretty strong. Like,
yeah, his and Alice, I would say.
Yeah, because he can actually make people fall asleep. Like, there was a time when they were in Arizona where he made Bella basically pass out.
Yeah, because she said her eyelids were feeling really heavy, right?
Yeah, so just his ability to actually physically control people's emotions, and just his constantly being connected. And people also mention how, especially in the movie, he always looks like he's in pain. Mm-hmm. And part of that is because he is the newest vegetarian, so it's kind of difficult being all around those humans all the time. But I think part of it has to do with just, like, the constant, like, emotional overload that he's probably receiving, because the same thing is with Edward. Edward mentions how he can't turn off his mind reading. He can kind of, like, tune it out, so it's, like, radio static, but it's always there. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, that has to be really overwhelming.
Well, yeah, you think your brain can't turn off. Imagine.
Everybody's thoughts.
Thank God all they at once. Thank God they can't sleep, because Edward would have the hardest time falling asleep.
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. And then Alice, her ability is foresight. And it's really interesting because when people generally think of seeing the future, it's just, you know, you see the future and this is how it's going to happen.
Like, that's so Raven.
Yeah, that's so Raven. That's actually what I was thinking about. but hers is really, her ability is really in tune with other people's intentions, because her visions that she sees are constantly changing based on every individual decision that, I guess theoretically, anybody in the world could make that would impact whatever situation she's trying to keep track of. Mm-hmm. Maybe? Mm-hmm. I don't know. So that's really, I don't know. I think that's really interesting, and I think a good way for, or an interesting way for the ability to see the future to work. Because it's kind of lame, honestly, if it's just, okay, this is what I see and there's no way to change it.
Well, and that kind of brings in an interesting aspect of some religions and the idea of, like, free will and people's choices that they make. And are you able to influence, you know, the idea of, can you make a change today to change the future? You know, like, will, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And just that kind of ties into Alice's power of, like, one change can throw her vision off track, and then once that decision's made, she's then able to, like, see the change that happened and the new outcome.
Yeah, and it's also interesting because she doesn't have the ability to see what change is made. She just knows that the future changes, mm-hmm. which is kind of annoying. But, you know, there wouldn't be any drama if she knew who was making stupid decisions at Bella.
So next we have the question of humanity, and what constitutes a human, and this kind of ties into witchcraft, like what constitutes a witch.
I mean, if you're going by superpowers, Alice, Jasper, and Edward, they're witch material.
They're witch material, but just this idea of, there's a lot to unpack here, but I think of the idea that Edward, whether it's true or not, doesn't see himself as a human, you know, because he's not really. But Bella kind of does see him as a human. And this is like a kind of battle that they constantly have. Just pulling some quotes. When Edward is, like, talking about how Bella should be scared, he says, "You should be a normal," in italics, "person would be. You don't even look shaken." Or there's this other quote a little bit later where he says, "A hard mocking edge entered his voice. You don't care if I'm a monster, if I'm not human." And just this idea of that, his inability to see himself as a human, you know, because ignoring his whole human history, I guess.
Yeah.
But then Bella, when she describes him, loves to point out when he has quote-unquote human characteristics. And there's one where she says, "In a very human gesture, he put his arm around me and pressed his face against my hair." And so just this battle of, between the two of them, what, you know, what is humanness? What, and in Breaking Dawn, when Jacob is like, "I will continue to visit Bella until her heart stops beating." And so is that what makes you human? Is your heart?
Is your being physically alive?
Yeah, your heart beating. Is it the actions that you take? Is it, you know, Jacob is, human, but he's a werewolf, and so it's like...
But yeah, Jacob sees himself as more human than not. Yeah. Or I think the ability is, or the line could be, I'm human, but I also have the ability to become inhuman.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with Edward, I guess at least from Jacob's point of view and even Edward's point of view, is he ceased being human the moment he completely transformed into a vampire, because the venom and or whatnot just kind of burned everything away. And all that's left is his kind of shell.
Yeah, and then I think that what kind of Bella becoming another feminist character is, she doesn't, I don't want to say doesn't care that he's not a human, but she sees her two, like, BFFs, Edward and Jacob, and says, one is, yes, he has a beating heart, but Edward over here has human characteristics. He looks human. She sees past the boundaries of, wow, she's so woke. She sees past the boundaries of the society's definition of humanity and realizes it doesn't matter
what, if your heart's beating or not, I can still love you both equally.
Oh my goodness. And then there's also this idea, going back to our previous thought on, like, connectedness and everything and humanity, and this is a long quote, so kind of bear with me, but it says, this is when Edward and Bella are watching a movie in biology, are they in bio? Yeah, I think so.
I think bio, yeah.
And she says, as soon as the room was dark, there was the same electric spark, the same restless craving to stretch my hand across the short space and touch his cold skin as yesterday. I leaned forward on the table, resting my chin on my folded arms, my hidden fingers gripping the table's edge as I fought to ignore the irrational longing that unsettled me. I didn't look at him, afraid that if he was looking at me, it would only make my self-control that much harder. Let's just process that for a second. Wow. Can we talk about how good of an author Stephanie Meyer is? Can we just talk about this for a second? Wow, I got chills reading that quote. But I think that this brings in such an interesting, like, the electric grid that I was talking about. That,
mm-hmm.
You know, that just the idea that this spark, electric spark, craving, you know, that just desire to just, like, touch somebody.
Yeah, and it's like, would you have that same intense electrifying connection if somebody wasn't human?
Yeah.
And some, like, I mean,
humanity, whether or not, whatever your definition is, creates spark. And
yeah,
I think that that's why Bella sees Edward as a human.
And he only focuses on the bad aspects of himself. But, like, when he's, like, what is it? When he wraps his arm around her, that's just so soft, and she's able to appreciate it.
He's a soft boy.
And it's just, and I think it's something that he maybe does without even thinking. So he still has that, those aspects of humanity, regardless of what he thinks about it.
Mm-hmm.
He just either chooses to ignore it or is too emo to even think about acknowledging them.
Oh my goodness. Well, with that soft boy comment, we now have a word from our sponsor, Rebecca Nurse. It's in the name. And that has been a word from our sponsors. Now, diving back into the conversation, we're gonna really go towards witchcraft right now. Witchy shit, as I like to call it. We've made it most of the show without swearing, so I had to throw that one in there. But could we make the connection that vampirism is, like, a similar, you know, we talk about how it's supernatural, you know, that sort of stuff that basically ties it in. But I think that there's more that we can look into with the vampirism and, like, witchcraft nature and Salem witchcraft nature, especially, well, if we look at outside of Salem, I mean, burning witches at the stake in Europe.
Was a big thing.
Well, we know that didn't actually happen in Salem. They were hanged.
But witch hunting in general.
Yeah, and witch hunting, and that is directly talked about with Carlisle's father.
Mm-hmm.
But could vampires be considered witchcraft? And how, I think that right now I want to talk about how did vampires come about? Because one thing that in the Salem Witch House class, not our capstone class, one thing that we talked about was how did the trials happen? Like what happened to create this event in history? And one of the ways that you can look at it just through evidence is like it was a societal upheaval of, you know, of ranking and hierarchy and family, like values. Relations and values and this the fear of. So if we look at witchcraft as defining it as a covenant with the devil, like that to the Puritans is like the scariest thing ever, because it's not only they're ignoring Puritan faith, they're like actively choosing to participate in something underneath the umbrella of Puritan faith, but with the devil.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, in that case, like, how did vampires come about? Let's kind of talk about that. The book doesn't really go into that, but, like, what does that have to say about the connections to the Salem Witch Trials?
I mean, well, yeah, and just you don't really know how, like, vampires in themselves came to exist because, given Carlyle's history that he tells about his father, there was still the belief that witches exist. So, assuming that witches do exist in this universe, maybe being a vampire is a curse? Or, I mean, it could also be, because I've seen it played off in other media as being a virus. So, like, I think that's, or, like, people just don't know. Maybe it's just a thing that exists. So I think those are, like, the kind of, the big three in regards to what is vampirism? Is it a curse? Is it a disease? Or is it just a thing? That's just how things be.
And the purpose in, what's a vampire's purpose in society? Because with the Cullens in Forks, they just kind of coexist and are there, and nobody really knows that they're nobody knows that they're different.
Mm-hmm.
And now kind of the secret's kind of getting out, but
I mean, it's still not really getting out.
Yeah, it's just Bella, I guess.
Yeah.
And the werewolves, but
they always been known, though.
Yeah, and, like, the vampires could be, according to Carlyle's dad and the werewolves, vampires are the devil, like.
And the devil is white.
And but this idea of, is Bella a witch then for making ties with Edward?
Maybe like if you go along the lines of vampires are a representation of the devil, then like she's a witch.
Yeah, because,
according to the devil.
Because she has the knowledge that they're not human, that they're this evil creature, but she continues to, like, make ties with them. Oh, this could be a big, big thing.
Yeah.
But then also with this idea that came about from the Salem Witch Trials, once they realized maybe it was getting a little bit out of hand, the people at the time said, okay, we have to make some sort of definition.
Mm-hmm.
And so they came up with this spectral evidence, which is where, like, your specter or your familiar, like, goes out. And the idea is that to be a witch, you have to inflict harm of some sort. And I think that with this, like, this idea of inflicting harm, obviously becoming a vampire hurts. Like,
yeah.
There's no doubt about that. And obviously they battle and they do, like, hurt people or animals. In the case of the Cullens, they're just, like, eating them. But, like, I think of witchcraft becoming a crime and making it, like, a criminal act, and this idea of inflicting harm, would, if vampires were real today, or even during the time of the Salem Witch Trials, like, would turning somebody into a vampire be a crime? And, like, even if it's consensual, would it have been a crime because it causes pain?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the idea of, is there consensual witchcraft, which I think we see today.
Yeah, definitely.
With the, like, people choosing to work in Wicca and, you know, studying the ways of whatever.
Yeah, well, Wicca's more of a religion.
Yeah, Wicca's more of a religion, but just, like, being a witch and practicing witchcraft is kind of a way of, like, modern day.
Yeah, and then also what you kind of get is, I was just thinking about this, there is kind of a form of a witch hunt going on in Twilight. You don't necessarily, it's not necessarily acknowledged, but the fact that there's something, and I think as the book goes on and as the movie goes on, it goes from something to someone who is killing a whole bunch of people in the general area.
Yeah.
And those people, and that ends up being James and Victoria and Laurent. But so the police and all that, and even the Cullens. Yeah, the Charlie is the police. So yeah, so like the police, the Cullens, and even the werewolves are kind of all in on this separate witch hunt to go after these vampires who are killing. And, like, the police don't really know what it is, but they're still participating in the hunt. Whereas the werewolves and
the Cullens,
no.
Yeah, this kind of insider-outsider, which is a very similar mentality of the Salem Witch Trials. Are you on the inside of the people doing the accusing or the court? Or are you on the outside? And where do these lines kind of blur? And I think that one way we see the lines blur is with Bella.
Mm-hmm.
Because she is a full human.
Yeah.
I would say my definition of human is a heart beating. I think that upon reflection of the, our previous section, like, Bella is the most human, quote-unquote.
Yeah, because there's nothing in any way, shape, or form supernatural about her.
Yeah, and she kind of crosses that boundary of insider-outsider. She's, like, the middle.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And so, this is a text that there's a text, Jocelyn, that I want you to talk about, but gosh darn, I am glad I don't have my phone. I didn't have my phone on loud this day because at 4 a.m., I woke up the next day noticing the time. I did not wake up at the time of it. I got a text from Jocelyn that was beautifully constructed, but it was at 4 a.m. So will you please enlighten our audience?
No, yeah. So I was kind of half dreaming, half asleep when I sent this text to Mel, and it was basically talking about, or I was basically trying to get at the magic of Twilight, in Twilight being the series as a whole, and how it kind of created this sensation frenzy, kind of mass hysteria kind of stuff, similar to what we talked about in our capstone class. And it's just kind of, you know, Twilight just started spreading, and it's just like people kept turning over and like being, oh, I'm Team Edward, I'm Team Jacob. Like they just became, I don't know, it was infectious, you know, how these kinds of things are. And then so just kind of like overall just likening the influence of Twilight on individuals and pop culture and fandom culture to witchcraft, and how at least in the case of Salem, it was kind of infectious, and like, you know,
mm-hmm.
people were suddenly all becoming afflicted, or people were suddenly all becoming witches.
And especially in Arthur Miller's adaptation of The Crucible, which
you mean,
or not the adaptation.
Yeah.
Arthur Miller's The Crucible, which is, as we've discussed in our classes, pretty historically inaccurate. Shout out to Kate for that wonderful project. I think that with this, the idea of, like, you're talking about, everybody kind of knows about it. Everybody, you know, the buzz and getting in on accusing people or getting, this is obviously Arthur Miller's idea that everybody could be a witch. Everybody is a Twilight. You know that, like,
everybody
that,
could be a fan of Twilight.
even your neighbor.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. But the, like, mass hysteria of Twilight.
Yeah, and like just the whole, and along with that, how people were pressured into reading it, watching it, and liking it. And then there were still those people who were outside of
mm-hmm.
that, I get the reach of that.
And
frenzy.
How we pressured Amanda into reading it.
Hey, she chose on her own accord.
She, yeah.
She listened. She was converted.
She was a converted Twihard. I don't know. Yeah. And so with that, I think it's time
to wrap it up.
To wrap things up. This is very bittersweet for me.
Yeah, no, same.
Because I'm ready for this work to be done, but I'm not ready for it to be done.
Yeah, it's been fun, you know, and we didn't really have any ideas what we were getting into. It was just kind of, I had done a short little radio, not really short, I had done a radio show project for another class last year, and so, and it was fun. So I was like, oh, maybe we can do a podcast for my English capstone. And then Mel was super thankful, or I was thankful that Mel wanted to do it with me, so that spared me some of the work.
I just remember, how did we even decide on Twilight? I remember we were just kind of...
We were sitting in the coffee shop talking about something, and I was like, oh, we should do a podcast on Twilight. We should do our capstone on Twilight.
And it definitely kind of started out, I think, I don't want to say as a joke, because I think that diminishes, like, what we've been saying, but just kind of something that was like, ha ha ha, you know, when we talk about, when we tell people, oh, our senior capstone is a capstone on Twilight, they're like, that's hilarious. But really, this has turned something, turned into something that I'm very invested in. And I think that, like, whether or not you necessarily believe that it's, like, super, it's not, like, hoity-toity academia, like, we did critical analysis of a book that impacted our culture.
Yeah, and our own personal lives.
And our own personal lives.
Yeah.
Once a Twihard, always a Twihard.
And even I am, I have to do future research for another aspect of my academic career, and I'm thinking about, yeah, my academic career. I'm thinking about sticking with the whole Twilight thing just because I spent so much time thinking about it and just looking at one specific aspect, and I'm probably going to be looking at Bella as a character, but just narrowing it down a bit more and, like, furthering that research. So, yeah.
Yeah. And with that, like, we just, I just want to give a quick shout out again to my dad and Beth Younger for being on the show. They did incredible work. Both of them thought about it clearly a lot, as you could hear from the original episodes, and we've gotten... Just for you guys, our listeners, like, thank you for putting up with our shit, and especially a few of you I know, I bring Twilight into almost every conversation at this point, just because it connects to almost everything, and just, like, thank you for putting up with that.
No, yeah, and all the friends back home who have watched the Twilight series with me way too many times this semester.
I've watched every movie more than once.
And I've probably watched them all more than Mel this semester alone.
She'll send me Snapchats, like, watching it again. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, Jocelyn. But this has been very fun and quite the way to end a capstone, I think.
Yeah.
And with that,
I guess all that's left to say is... Stay thirsty.